I'm John Kroll. Today, in this recorded No Limits, we're going to talk about the highs and lows of the year in movies so far. We will talk about the big hits, the major flops, the hidden gems, and the overrated misses. We'll talk about what's coming to screens in the weeks ahead, what to see, and what to avoid. My guests are three old friends of the program: WFYI's own Matthew Soucy, the host of Film Sociology, Nouveau's Ed Johnson-Ott, and Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yeah. Because this is a recorded show, we won't be taking calls, emails, or messages via social media. But we do hope you enjoy the conversation. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. This is a special recorded No Limits, so we won't be taking calls, emails, or messages via social media, but we hope you enjoy the conversation. We're going to be talking about the year in movies so far. We have with us, we got the old band back together again. we are talking with WFYI's own Matthew Soucy, who is the host of Film Sociology, Christopher Lloyd, who is with Film Yap, and Nouveau's Ed Johnson-Ott. This feels like old home week for
it's
all of us.
Good to see you, John.
It's good to see all of you. Welcome you back to the program. So why don't we start first with, we'll start on a high note. We're going to talk about some of the bad stuff first. But the best film experience that each of you has had this year so far, it doesn't have to be the best movie necessarily, but just what really hit you? I'll start with Matthew.
Gentlemen, are we Universal on Mad Max Fury Road?
It's mine.
No.
No?
No.
Really?
No.
Okay. No, I guess 2-1 then. I would say Mad Max Fury Road. You say Mad Max. What would you say, Ed?
What We Do in the Shadows.
Really?
Oh. Is my favorite. That's the most fun I've had in a theater this year.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, before they do their riffs on Mad Max here, why don't we talk about what it is you liked about that film?
It's New Zealand. It's a film from New Zealand with the This Is the Concord guys.
Flight of the Concords.
Flight of the Concord
Mumble
guys.
Mumblecore Grand Gang.
It's about it's a real world style mockumentary about four roommates who are vampires from four different eras over the centuries, and it's them living at home and trying to get real, man. It is stupid and hilarious and wonderfully thought through and just flat dumb at some times, but other times it's just brilliant. Yeah. And I've watched it over and over, and it just kills me. Yeah. I had a wonderful time.
It is very funny,
and good timing, because actually it's out on DVD and Blu-ray this week.
Yeah,
cool.
So good timing, Ed.
Yeah, Jermaine Clement, I think, was one of the stars there and co-wrote it.
Mm-hmm.
They run into, I mean, this is the level. They run into a group of werewolves buddies in the park, and they're all yelling insults at each other. And one of the werewolves says an off-color word. And one of the other werewolves corrects him and he goes, "Hey, we don't behave like that. We're werewolves, not swear wolves." It's...
And for the record, not shirtless, not glittery.
No.
Yeah. My favorite throwaway line from that film is actually, you know, because they're now it's the modern times and they're trying to get hip with, you know, the internet and all the cool stuff. And so the Jermaine Clement character, who's supposed to be basically Vlad the Impaler from back in the day, and here he is now. And he's you know, sitting at the computer and they're trying to get him to go out. He doesn't want to go. He says, "Let me do my bidding, my dark bidding." And then he turns to the computer and he's like, "I'm bidding on this table." And he's on the eBay website. Just a great throwaway joke.
And, you know, they're flatmates and they're trying to score victims at a club. And there's always, this, you know, all of the roommate stereotypes, characters that, you know, they are represented in this flat.
So all three of you like the film.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I didn't like it as much as you guys did, but I thought it would have been a great 30-minute segment, but it's I thought it was a fun.
I liked it full length. I just thought I had a ball.
So tell me then, the two of you say Mad Max, right? I'll start with you.
Yeah,
Chris.
That's definitely my favorite movie of the year so far, and probably it was my best experience at the cinema this year because I was really fearful that I was not going to like it. I just revere the first two Mad Max movies. The third one, Max Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome, is also good, but, you know, it's clearly not the equal of the others. The Road Warrior, I mean, you know, when I was, you know, I was like 12 when that came out. I mean, that's one of my seminal movies. It's one of my all-time favorite films. You know, the fact that Mel Gibson speaks maybe a total of 90 words throughout the entire length of it. And so when I heard about this movie that it was essentially going to be one long chase scene, it's like, I don't want to see a video game version of Mad Max, you know, where it's just chase, chase, chase. I want to see other things going on. So when it came out, it just surprised me in so many different ways, starting with the fact that Mad Max is really the secondary character in it. Mm-hmm. You know, they're
that.
Like, huh?
If that.
Yeah. Just such a wonderful, surprising film. Old fashioned stunts. I mean, there's some CGI in it, but for the most part, they're doing practical stunts and they're just gobsmacking what happens and yet believable. Just a great thing. You know, like the Road Warrior movies, you know, a popcorn movie that has deeper themes to it. Mm-hmm.
I remember sitting, showing my daughter scenes from The Road Warrior and, you know, being the old man saying real stunts done by real stunt people. And I think the most CG in this film was to take off the wire works, you know, so you could see there are guys swinging from, you know,
giant poles
and actual cars having. We know, and yeah, everybody. The other thing is Charlize Theron, who we knew she was going to be in the film, but this became a much more girl power or women powering film than I had anticipated. There's these wonderful old leathery Australian women that know how to handle a bow and a rifle and just add to the fun of it. And yeah, kudos to Tom Hardy for, you know, basically doing a silent character. I mean, the guy makes fascinating choices year after year. Mm-hmm. And it was just a lot of fun. It was a great adrenaline rush. And now George Miller, who directed the first three Mad Max films and directed this, I think he's 70. So now he's in that. I love filmmakers in their 60s, 70s, and 80s that can make a film that just rattles your fillings. Last time it was like this was Scorsese with Wolf of Wall Street.
Yep.
But it was a lot of fun. Yep. People, closer to the screen you can sit, the better.
People might laugh when I say this, but it's really a movie that makes you think. I mean, I've seen it twice now, probably will see it a third time before it leaves theaters, which I hardly ever do just because I don't have the time. But I constantly think about this movie, you know, like, you know, the main bad guy, a guy named Immortan Joe, who's actually played by the same actor who played the villain in the original Mad Max, different character, though. And he's this, you know, decrepit old god figure with his own fortress and, you know, whole breed of
birthing agents,
you know,
and they're called
and slaves, you know, sex slaves, which are essentially the women there that are trying to escape. You know, I think about that guy, like, you know, what, you know, because this is supposed to have been going on now for, you know, 15, 20 years after the apocalypse now. And how did he start out? And, you know, there's part of me that really thinks that at one point, Immortan Joe was a guy with noble values who was trying to do something really good. And this is what it's been corrupted into over the years. And there's other characters where you can just sort of fill in your own backstories about it. And that's so rare in particularly summer movies that, you know, you really feel like the characters, you know, have these three-dimensional lives before and after we're seeing them in that two-hour block.
Before we pivot and turn to the other side of that coin, Ed, did you like the movie too?
Oh, I liked it very much. Okay. Just not on the level they did.
Okay. So, and I should say to our audience, if you are just joining us, this is a recorded No Limits, which means we're not taking calls, emails, or messages via social media. We are talking about the year in movies so far. So we asked most pleasant film experience so far. The flip side, the other side of that coin, is what was the biggest disappointment so far? I'll start with Matthew on that one.
Are you talking disappointment or worse film? There's sometimes a difference.
There is a difference. Disappointment. We'll get to worst film. I mean, there are some you just expect to be bad.
Okay. I guess probably for the most disappointing film of the summer so far, I think, has been Cameron Crowe's Aloha.
You saw it?
Yeah, I was one of the nine people that actually saw that. It's Cameron Crowe once again making beautiful loser gets a second chance at life. And instead of Tom Cruise and instead of Orlando Bloom, and it's now oh my God.
Bradley Cooper.
Thank you. Who, you know, it's a travelogue film.
Yeah.
Only it's not involving Adam Sandler. He, is getting a second chance to do some work in Hawaii with Emma Stone.
Who's an Asian American.
Who is blasted for being a partial Asian American in this. Bill Murray. I mean, it's a really good cast. Bill Murray, John Krasinski, Rachel McAdams. I wish they worked on something else. But if you've seen Jerry Maguire, if you've seen Elizabethtown, and to a certain degree, Almost Famous, which I still think is Crowe's best work, you've seen this film, and there really was no need for it. And it really kind of opened and closed at the same time.
I haven't seen it, but it sounds like it doesn't pass the Gene Siskel test, which that was the late great film critic was. Would you rather watch this movie or that same cast of actors be able to just watch them having lunch and observe them?
And I would add on to that by saying, now that we have DVDs and Blu-rays, I want the rap party of Aloha, because that will be more interesting than Aloha itself.
My most disappointing would probably be Terminator Genesis. I don't know why I had my hopes up for it, because you had two great science fiction classics and they've just been doing other stuff since then that no one really wants to see, you know, two movies and a TV show. Basically, the rule of thumb on those, if James Cameron is not directing it, it's probably not going to be very good. And this really wasn't. I enjoyed seeing Arnold do his thing again.
Really?
I did, because he's so charismatic, but they were just trying to press it through the strainer of a cheap, quippy retcon. They're trying to do to it what they did to the Star Trek movies, which I know everybody loved the new Star Trek movies. I didn't, you know, to me they were like a betrayal of what Star Trek was all about. And that's what I felt this really was. It was just, we're trying to just squeeze one out while Schwarzenegger is still semi-believable as, you know, a killer robot, even with CGI help.
Ed.
I'm drawing a blank right now. As far as ones that really bugged me, there's little independent films. I've screamed a lot of those.
Yeah.
And I watched one called Aloft that just really drove me nuts. But as far as anything that would be recognizable to a casual film goer, I'm just drawing a blank right now.
Talk about the line that you shared on social media. We were talking about the same movie, a little independent movie that we saw for the film festival. And you talked about, you know, these young filmmakers, we see some of these films where they're making their first or second movie. They have virtually no budget. They're getting their friends to work on it. And, they do the old thing of they fall back on write what you know. And, you know, typically the lives of 25-year-olds who are just out of college and trying to make movies and, you know, aren't terribly interesting, and we get movies about that. So Ed had a line that I think is a classic bit of wisdom for cinephiles.
When they say write what you know, that doesn't mean write what everybody knows.
Right. So in terms of then, you know, we focused on Mad Max and What You Do in the Shadows. There of the other big films this summer, like we had another Avengers film come out.
It was good. It got the job done. It was good.
Yeah. I mean, but I think, especially after Mad Max, I enjoyed myself with the Avengers. Of course, it's too choppy. I'm old. I would like to see actual fights and actual car chases, which we get with Mad Max, but, it doesn't hold it. I think it doesn't even hold a candle to Mad Max Fury Road.
What was your reaction to the movie, Chris?
To the second Avengers, it was not as good as the first Avengers, but I think it was sort of destined not to be as good, just because that was such, you know, the sweet spot of, because we'd had these sort of up and down superhero movies based on comic books, some successful, some not so much. And this was the one that just seemed to just find the groove and hit all the notes. And then, you know, like that moment when Hulk grabs the bad guy and when he's giving his little monologue spiel and does what you always wanted to see a superhero do to a supervillain. It just was perfection. And so by definition, I don't think the second Avengers movie had a chance, but I still thought it was really, really good, really entertaining popcorn movie.
And kudos to James Spader.
Yeah.
He's probably my favorite part about it.
And the fact that they never felt tempted to like show his face or show a version of his face, just totally be that CGI character.
Mm-hmm.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the year so far in movies. This is a recorded No Limits, which means that we won't be taking calls, emails, or messages via social media. We do hope you're enjoying the conversation. We're talking with three old friends of the program, WFYI's own Matthew Soucy, the host of Film Sociology, Christopher Lloyd of The Film Yap, and Nuvo's Ed Johnson Ott. We're going to come back, talk more about what's been good and what's been bad year in movies so far. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about movies in this special recorded No Limits. Because it is recorded, we won't be taking calls, emails, or messages via social media, but we do hope you're enjoying the conversation. My guests are WFYI's own Matthew Soucy, the host of Film Sociology, Christopher Lloyd of the Film Yap, and Nuvo's Ed Johnson Ott. Basically, the old gang is back together once again. So we were talking before the break about both the your favorite experience this year and the biggest disappointment. And for two of you, the favorite, the best experience was Mad Max Fury Road. Ed, you liked to What We Do in the Shadows. And the disappointments were somewhat varied.
Mm-hmm. Although I have to say, during the break, Chris brought up another title that was a disappointment.
Okay. Chappie. Yo. It was the third movie by, how do you pronounce his name? Neil Blomkamp?
Blomkamp, who gave Blomkamp. Us District 9.
Wonderful science fiction drama. Then he had his follow-up, the one with
Elysium,
which was
not so wonderful
great.
Science fiction drama.
Oh, not wonderful. And then this one that just
it was RoboCop meets Frankenstein.
Yeah,
and not nearly as good as
well intentioned, and it's that sort of thing where you don't want to say about someone who's still pretty young and just not that far into their career, but you want to ask, did they really just have one good movie in them? Because sometimes that's the case, and I'm starting to ask that about him.
Has there been a movie that I think this is different from biggest disappointment, but has there been a movie yet where you've been there and think, oh, how could anyone think that would have worked? How could anyone think
Mordecai. With the Johnny Depp.
Because Johnny Depp with a mustache apparently was going to be was the selling point. And that's here's the thing. I watched that at home. I missed the screening for that because I reviewed something else when Mordecai opened. And there's sometimes, and this is my cinematic self-loathing, when it comes out on video, my brain will go, well, how bad can it be? And then I rented it, and then it really was bad.
It's basically, an hour and 45 minutes of Johnny Depp trying to do costume shtick for his own entertainment.
But you know what kind of almost also infuriated me? Paul Bettany almost made me laugh in that film.
Yeah,
and when you make me laugh, that means the film cannot be completely and utterly worthless. But he came real close.
Man,
I was going to be mad at him.
That was an expensive movie. They spent like $90 million on that thing, if you can believe it.
And so while I was watching Mordecai, I kept remembering, okay, Johnny Depp's going to play Whitey Bulger later this year. And that's a film that he's not using to pay off his island. So we're really hoping on this one for the Whitey Bulger. Black Mass, I believe it's called.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's shift then to I want to end this program on a high note. So we're going to talk about the bad stuff first and then build toward the good. If we had to say build a list of, say, the five worst movies of calendar year 2015 so far.
Aloft.
It's tough to do because a lot of the really, really bad stuff, they don't show to us. The studios generally, they're not stupid. They know when they have a dog on their hands, so they refuse to screen it for us.
Did you guys see 50 Shades of Grey?
I did. That was pretty.
Again, I rented that. So here's
money to see it.
Yeah, I know. It was the how bad can it be? All right, John, I was thinking of you when I watched this.
Well, wait a second.
I will preface this.
That is the mother of all stories right there.
The whole, just the relationship between these two people, they're just not interesting and not fascinating to people. But the setup is what I thought of John. When the Dakota Johnson character is filling in for her roommate to do an interview for the school paper. My journalism prof would fail me immediately if I sent one of my flatmates to do my work for me, yet alone not do an interview via the phone or via email, which I wouldn't do either, or the simple thing of rescheduling when your roommate is sick. Oh, no, let's send Don Johnson and Melanie Griffith's daughter to go do the job for me. That's what I think infuriated me more than the contract that happens between this guy and this woman and this girl, which I knew was going to be kind of just bad suburban porn to begin with.
Was 50 Shades this year?
Yeah. That was this year.
Yeah. Oh, my
God. That was just like, months ago.
Good grief. I mean, this stuff, it just, but there's so much product out there. You know, this it's just the big movie for this week. You know, and that it just, it barely registers, you know. It's just occasionally a real movie comes out.
John, yeah. you would flunk Dakota Fanning's roommate, wouldn't you?
Oh, yeah, I would.
Thank you. That's all I was saying.
I would.
But look, like, we haven't talked Jurassic Park. Jurassic World. Because it was perfectly fine product. Nothing wrong with what it was. It's, you know.
But if you're on the board of directors for Jurassic Inc., wouldn't you change the name after the problems 22 years ago in the park?
You'd want to milk it.
Really?
Yeah, you'd want to milk it. You know? But I'll tell you what, if you had Chris Pratt in your movie, you'd give him some funny lines.
Yeah.
That's what I was hoping for.
It was a very fun, forgettable movie, I think, evidenced by the fact that we all kind of forgot about it until just now. That, yeah, it's literally a movie you fork over your $10 to see, and 3 days later, it's, you know, it's downloaded out of your brain.
And it very soon will be the third biggest money-making movie in history.
Yeah.
Behind
the two James Cameron movies.
Oh, and that? Okay.
It will be number three after Titanic and whatever that second one.
Avatar.
I can think of a couple other disappointments. There's probably one you've definitely heard of and one you've not. Little one was called Barely Lethal, which was Hailee Steinfeld. Remember her? She got an Oscar nomination for True Grit a few years ago. You know, and now she's 18 years old or so, and so she has to make some movie about her being a teen super spy, because apparently that's the sort of scripts that you get when you're 16 or 17 years old in Hollywood. That was disappointing, just because the fact that, boy, someone that talented, that young, doing such great work, and this is their, you know, where they have to go next.
Yeah, this is what it leads to, basically.
Yeah, but she was also in the, Bart and Bella's, what was the singing movie that I can't even remember the name of?
Sorry, but she was also in
Pitch
Ender's
Perfect 2.
Pitch Perfect 2.
But you clearly don't have teenage daughters.
Right.
I am Pitch Perfect less. I haven't seen either one of them.
She didn't care. So. Yeah. But she was also in Ender's Game and Romeo and Juliet. So I guess one for a paycheck and one for the resume.
Yeah, I don't think any list of disappointments for this year, though, would be complete without Jupiter Ascending, which I remember when I saw it, you know, I couldn't even muster up, you know, the energy to hate it. It was just so completely depressing. You know, what I've said about it is I just felt sympathy. You know, usually when you see a terrible movie, you have sympathy for yourself and my time's been wasted, my money's been wasted. This, I felt bad for everybody involved in making the movie, because I know that, you know, if it's not the end of the career, their active career, it's going to be a huge black spot on it.
There's a great list that you can find of people who've won the Academy Award and then their follow-up. And I cite the example of Shirley MacLaine following up Terms of Endearment with Cannonball Run 2. And I think Eddie Redmayne's on that list now, going from The Theory of Everything to Jupiter Ascending.
And we've mentioned a couple others, like Ted 2 came out.
Ted 2. That was one, how can they mess it up? Well, they can mess it up by, instead of just having the guy and the two best friends talk raunchy, you can get noble. You can try to have a message with Ted 2.
With a horny little animated teddy bear, yes.
And a courtroom drama about what it means to be a soul. In Ted 2. You know, I mean, it's like the meaning of life being expressed by Sherry Lewis and Lamb Chop. Mm-hmm.
I got another one for you. And again, one of those ones, it's, you know, when you see a movie that's disappointing or bad, you know, you tend to just sort of like, you know, shunt it out of your brain and forget about it. So Tomorrowland. with George Clooney, directed by Brad Bird, who, you know, a guy that up until now could do no wrong. Every movie he made, everything he touched was not just good, but brilliant.
The Iron Giant, The Incredibles.
Even the Mission Impossible.
He made a live transition from animation to live action, made a tremendous action film with Mission Impossible, Ghost Recon, or whatever it was called.
Ghost Protocol.
But Ghost Protocol, I mean, revived a moribund franchise, gave Tom Cruise's career a big
boost.
And here he is with this thing, and you're just watching. And you're like, I can't figure out what they're trying to do.
Well, I can. There's a line I'm borrowing from Ed in his. I always remember in your review of In the Valley of Ella, the Paul Haggis film. You said you felt like you were getting hit over the head with a cardboard tube.
Oh yeah,
not a hammer, no. A cardboard tube. Well, the cardboard tube in Tomorrowland was really solid. You know, it was, you know, the world's going to hell in a handbag, and creativity with a capital C and all caps is what's going to save us. And you're to borrow a line from Edge Review, is who wants to see a grumpy George Clooney? I don't. And he has to be the curmudgeon in Tomorrowland, the hesitant one that they, you know, the teenager and him have to work together, even though they don't like each other.
In terms of these. I mean, are there films that you approach this year just thinking they were going to be bad and they surprised you, that there was something that you thought, oh, boy, I really do need to be paid to see
this? I kind of liked Jupiter Ascending. I mean, it was horrible, but it was really fun.
Guilty
horrible,
pleasure,
I thought.
Guilty
yeah.
pleasure, horrible.
I mean, it was so astonishingly horrible.
It's what Pauline Kael would have called, it's trash, but glorious trash. Yeah.
But then,
and Channing Tatum, you know how when you have hunky guys in movies, the thing is, if you're going to have them in there, get their shirts off. Mm-hmm. With Channing Tatum, it was like, well, we got him. He's kind of a fish guy. He could fly, sort of. Let's just take his shirt off and have him run around for about 20 minutes. And it's like, thank you. That's all I needed from your film. Have a nice day. And you leave. You know, thank you.
Ed and I diverge greatly on the appeal of Channing Tatum.
Tatum. Okay.
It depends on the I got one because I remember seeing the campaign, the ads for it, and I thought this is something that guys will be dragged to. And it turned out to be a smarter date film than I had anticipated. But Age of Adeline, the Blake Lively time travel film that's smart about its time travel.
Yeah.
And there's enough guy girl, you know, gooey stuff for date night that's really smart. And Harrison Ford looked like he actually cared.
Yeah, Harrison
supporting
Ford,
role.
Harrison Ford comes in the movie halfway through and kind of saves it with being this like really, you know, mushy emotional presence, which, you know, Harrison Ford, whatever you want to say about him and his roles, not a touchy feely guy for the most part.
Not since Hanover Street.
Yeah.
But it's like step aside, kids. Here's what a movie star does.
And yeah, he was actually into it. It was actually really enjoyable.
Yeah. I'll mention a horror film called It Follows.
Which is also on DVD this week.
Which is also on DVD. Just because I didn't know much about it, wasn't expecting much of it. Horror films has kind of become like this own little niche now where, you know, the people who like them go see them and no one else does. And they're so just carbon copies of themselves. And, you know, and this one was really original. Really moody and creepy without being like gory, violent, and boo gotcha and all that kind of stuff. And just, you know, so evocative. This terrific music soundtrack by Disaster Piece is the name of the person or group, I'm not sure. And it's just all these weird chords and atonal things going on. And it's in some ways hard to listen to, but just made for this. You know, one thing I love about, you know, supernatural films is I hate when you have a supernatural film, you introduce the supernatural world, and then at the end you explain it all and wrap it in a nice little bow and we're done with it. You know, I love the fact that they, you know, there's this movie about where people are start to be followed by this mysterious killer force and no one really knows why, and it just follows you around and it's never explained why this is or what the genesis of it is. It's just completely comes at you.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about movies here on No Limits. This is a recorded No Limits, which means we're not taking calls, emails, or messages via social media, but we hope you're enjoying the conversation. Talk to me about the hidden gems a little bit. I mean, films that did not find the audience that they should have, that that you really wish people would take another look
There's
at.
A few. I was actually compiling my list of the films of the summer, and they've been smaller pictures, almost like last year. Last year we had, in amidst the blockbusters, films like Jodorowsky's Dune and Locke, which made my top five. But there's a couple films. One is Gemma Bovary, which is the Gemma Arterton girl next door. It's a French country village, and this young couple from London moves next door, and the old baker is fond of her from afar. And it sounds creepy on paper, but it's really well done. It's just a quaint little art film that I don't think enough people have seen. In my opinion,
played one week.
Pardon?
One week.
So now you're going to have to wait for it on DVD. But for me, there's not enough people have seen Love and Mercy, the Brian Wilson film with an actually good performance from John Cusack, who's really due for one, and I think Paul Dano's best work. After Little Miss Sunshine, he's been kind of typecast as oddballs and sleazebags, and to see him as a young Brian Wilson literally trying to get the voices out of his head and in a recording studio to make Pet Sounds and then later try to make Smile. I don't think you have to be a Beach Boys fan to appreciate it, but I'm a music dork, so I really, really loved watching that film.
I can think of a couple, both very tiny budgeted films about young people, teenagers, you know, trying to find their way in the world. One you may have heard was called Me and Earl and the Dying Girl. It was a big hit that came out of the Sundance Film Festival. And got sold for a bunch of money and got a distribution deal. And unfortunately, just kind of has died on the vine. People really haven't gone to see it. I think maybe because thematically and plot-wise, it's somewhat similar to The Fault in Our Stars, which was a big hit from last year. It's about a girl who's got a terminal disease and the boy who's sort of forced by the parents to become her friend. And they go on from there and find, you know, a real sort of relationship that's just really genuine and smart. And then another one that's just was out in the last few weeks is called Dope, which is about these young kids in South Central L.A. who, you know, are academic overachievers, nerds, want to go to school, go to Harvard. But they sort of get caught up in, you know, the drugs and violence of their world, except it's a comedy. It's a comedy about their misadventures. It's sort of the urban American version of Risky Business with Tom Cruise.
That's a nice comparison.
And Ed, how about you? Hidden gems.
There's one that it's called Amy. It's the biography of Amy Winehouse. And it goes way past what you would expect of a mute.
There's one other film that came out with, and all due respect to Inside Out, which I know is the big animated film this year from Pixar, and which I loved. But there was a Studio Ghibli film called When Marnie Was There. And it's another, I refer to it as the other animated film about a young girl's emotions. And it's kind of a Studio Ghibli story. Young girl goes to the country for the summer to live with relatives, and she strikes up a friendship with a very special imaginary friend who may or may not be imaginary. And I'm a big Studio Ghibli Miyazaki guy. This is not, of course, Miyazaki's work, but it's a studio. But it looks great. It has a great heart to it. And hopefully more people will go and check that out when it comes out on video.
And Amy, let me see if I can control the frog in my throat this time.
It's okay.
Amy is the biography of Amy Winehouse. What makes it different from most biographies is that it's recent. And because it's recent, there's video of everything. When they talk about the early days, there's video on the kids' cell phones. So you're seeing Amy as a young girl. And the second thing that goes with it is the filmmaker puts every word to every song on the screen as it's being sung. So you're seeing this sweet little Jewish girl in London and her friends just be kids, little lovable kids. And you're seeing and hearing the words that she was writing at that time. And you see the way the events that she's chattering about to her friends translate into these songs. And you're seeing the sophistication in the songs that certainly isn't visible in the girl. That leads you into the whole story, and it's just masterfully done. It's a very, very good movie.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about movies and a special recorded No Limits here with the old friends of the program, Matthew Soucy, Christopher Lloyd, and Ed Johnson Ott. Because this is a recorded program, we are not taking calls, we're not taking emails, we're not taking messages via social media, but we do hope you're enjoying the conversation. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. This is a special recorded No Limits, which means we're not taking calls, emails, or messages via social media. We're talking about movies. With the old band, our good friends, WFYI's own Matthew Soucy, host of Film Sociology, the Film Yap's Christopher Lloyd, and Nuvo's Ed Johnson Ott. We were talking beforehand about hidden gems and all of that, but a recurrent theme I've heard from you guys that I'd like to talk a little bit about that speaks specifically to Indianapolis and to Indiana. As a film market, I mean, over and over again, you guys have said, well, it was only here a week, or it was only, you know, you had to pretty much not blink or you would miss it. Mm-hmm. Is that a problem? I mean, are there really fine films that we do not get? Chris, you're nodding at me, so I'm going to go with you first.
There's good films that we don't get. And there's also films that we do get that, you know, they don't get screened for us, or they don't send us a DVD or something like that. So there's no way for us, you know, the critics who are trying to get the word out about these films to let people know. In a lot of cases, like you said, they're gone within a week. And it's just been this ongoing challenge that we've had, you know, and the Indiana critics, you know, we've sort of banded together and made our own little group and, you know, give out awards and try and lobby and have, you know, some sort of a presence. And that's definitely helped. But like, you know, we still have one major, major studio that will not screen its films here. I mean, even big, big ones. With rare exception. So it's just this ongoing challenge. And, you know, if we can't let people know about it, then people, you know, that base of excitement isn't going to be out there to receive it when it does come.
The Cineplexes try. You know, I mean, but they're Cineplexes, and they need to keep the money and the big crowds rolling in, so they have to go with the more mainstream fare. And then we have the Landmark Theater at Keystone, where they really, I mean, they still have to, you know, you'll see something like Jurassic World playing there every once in a while because they need the money. But they get a tremendous number of independent films in that we never would see otherwise.
Which studio is it, by the way, that won't screen?
I mean, do you want to do that?
Oh, yeah. Should we say, I don't want to say that, you know, because I don't want to step on toes.
What does it rhyme with?
It rhymes with Hennieth Fenchery Socks. and they've been better. For instance, they've got a new film coming out later this week called Paper Towns, of course, based on the novel by our own John Green.
Yeah, I was going to say, not going to open that in Indianapolis. Yeah,
so every film based on a writer from Indianapolis,
when it's a hometowns thing, then they'll come through with us. But, you know, we've had other studios like Warner Brothers for a while was not screening here, and we lobbied them and bugged them, and, you know, they're responding now, and they're back on board.
I think when we do our, you know, whether it's a show or website or in the newspaper, especially for me, I try to find whenever possible find the alternatives, because we know something's going to open and people are going to go see it regardless of what our review is. Like if Jurassic World or the Avengers, people are going to go see it no matter what we say or do. But if you need I would hope that some people take a chance. I understand, you know, we get to see these movies for nothing. And we know that you need a babysitter sometimes, and the cost of concessions and the ticket, and it's an investment. I understand that. But if you know something's going to be here for months, you know, I would hope that sometimes you would take a chance and go see something that's going to be in one screen in Indianapolis. And people make fun. So that's why I don't accept it when people say there's nothing to see. Well, if there's nothing to see at the multiplex, go to the art house. And if there's nothing at the art house, you can see it on Netflix or you can see it online. And if you can't find anything after that, I can't help you. I tried.
So what are of the two or three films, pick two or three films that have come out this year that people absolutely ought to see. And give me a short reason for each one, why you should see it. I'll start with that on that one.
Amy, because it takes you into tragedy, but it really, it shows you how. It shows you the steps. You know, it's a cautionary tale that sinks. And Get Video and what We Do in the Shadows. See it. It's just funny.
Chris.
Well, 50 Shades of Grey, of course. just to see how not to make a good movie. I don't know. Must see, you know, I mean, I would love for everyone to see Mad Max. You know, it really hasn't done all that well at the box office.
It's made its money.
But let's put it this way. They're not, I don't know if the studio's clamoring for Mad, you know, another sequel and another movie after that.
Beyond Thunderdome?
Beyond Thunderdome. Yeah, that would probably be my must see just because I think it's so wonderful. There's also some small films that get released with, you know, no hoopla, no screenings, no nothing, that are really good. Like there was a children's film from Great Britain called Paddington, of course, based on the famous books.
Yeah.
Just got absolutely dumped into theaters here with nothing, no kind of media or anything. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful family picture. So if you haven't seen that, I would definitely recommend Paddington.
I'm with you on that. I rented that, and they took a children's story and they didn't muck it up.
They didn't
need to put in, you know, rock music, or it was like the last film version of Winnie the Pooh. They just let the characters and let the stories be itself. Now, it's not perfect. There's a kidnapping angle in the last third, which is like the film version of Madeline. I don't think it was really needed. You have plenty of books that you could make an episodic film on. But you get to see Nicole Kidman chew scenery, and it's fun.
Yeah, she's really
good
villain.
As the villain in that. So for me, I would say Mad Max Fury Road, because I love to see actual stunts done by real stunt people. And it's just, I can't wait to watch it on Blu-ray, because I know they will show how much CG they used or how little CG they used. And that's just going to be exciting to me to watch. And then when Marnie was there, as I said before, if you Inside Out is really, really fun, it's really emotional. But I think especially that we don't know how many more Studio Ghibli films are going to happen now that Miyazaki is retired. I think it's a great introduction to international film for kids.
And then, you know, since we are pretty much at the midpoint of the summer film season.
Well, really, we're
a little past
film-wise, we're on the downslope. After 4th of July, it's
cuz now the summer blockbuster season starting in March.
April. Yeah, or March, April, yeah. March and April, yeah.
And, so we're talking about kids are going back to school.
Yeah, because of all of that. What are the films that are still out there that you're looking forward to seeing?
I will say, I've been saying since the beginning of the year, Ricky and the Flash, which is a drama starring Meryl Streep as like a rock star who sort of comes back to, you know, find the life that she, you know, she walked out on her family and kids.
It looks awful, but it's Meryl Streep and she's pretty smart.
Yeah. Yeah. She's one of those people that, like, you know, I would pay to just watch her read the phone book.
But and it's also, it should be, it's a reteaming of her with Kevin Kline.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's also written by Diablo Cody, who gave us Juno, and it's directed by Jonathan Demme.
Yeah.
So on paper, it looks like a really solid group. And I'm actually looking forward to that as well. Ed?
Fantastic Four, I want to see just to see if maybe they might be able to at least make it better than the other two.
Yeah.
Well, that's not a real hot
it's been one sad thing after another with that franchise.
Yeah.
And they're trying to reboot and they can't even get the thing to look right, but still, you know.
He says the thing, he doesn't mean something. He means the
character known as
Benjamin Jacob Grimm, my favorite comic book character of all time, which no one can seem to get right. And you know
you want to say it or you want to say it?
I know I want to say it.
You say it.
All these iterations that they've tried to have done, there's three different movie versions of the Fantastic Four now. The Roger Corman one, the ones they did about 10 years ago, and then these. The thing, if everyone knows, the big orange rocky
muscular
guy.
Cheeto.
You know, has this very distinctive brow ridge that goes across the front of his head that just makes the character, gives him this sort of martial look and makes him, you know, a little bit mysterious and angry. And for whatever reason, whenever they make these movies,
they take
off the ridge and it looks like a big orange ape with eczema.
And they've done it again with this one. He does not have his brow ridge.
Brow ridge.
Brow ridge. Okay.
You know, it's wrong. It's wrong, I tell you.
Okay.
And there's a little thing by a Star Wars film coming out that I think has possibilities.
Speaking of bringing the band back together.
Yeah, they're all there. I'm looking forward to Black Mass. I want to see what Johnny Depp does with Whitey Bulger.
If you've not seen the trailer for that, it's mesmerizing.
And Southpaw.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually.
Southpaw, Jake Gyllenhaal.
And
boxing drama, yeah.
There's also, I have a special spot for Shaun the Sheep and the fact that they're making a Shaun the Sheep movie. This is from the gang that gave us Chicken Run and Wallace and Gromit. So it should be another smart animated film with probably no dialogue.
And then what films are you just flat dreading?
August.
That are coming.
Yeah, everything in August. Everything in August. I'm really worried about Mission Impossible, Rogue Nation.
Rogue Nation.
Just because it's a Tom Cruise Mission Impossible movie. It opens in 2.5 weeks, and we've barely heard anything about it, which tells you something important.
Yeah. I wonder how much longer Tom Cruise has got as a viable action star. Do you realize he is now at the age where other actors, you know, would like come back to play the old guy in the movies? Like, he's about the same age that Sean Connery was when he played in The Untouchables, if you can believe it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Or Harrison Ford in Star Wars later this year.
Yeah.
And I'd love to be surprised by Mission Impossible, but I don't think we're going to be.
There's a film opening next week that I got mixed reactions, and it's Pixels, which looks like it could make fun of disaster movies. And your hero is Adam Sandler, so there's that. But it does make fun of, you know, yeah, like Independence Day or Godzilla. But it has Peter Dinklage, who I absolutely love. And if you – another old movie title that nobody saw to throw out there. But if you ever saw the documentary The King of Kong –
yeah.
A Fistful of Quarters, which was a documentary about a Donkey Kong competition. There was a guy in the film, one of the most loathsome individuals I've ever seen in a documentary, and I loved Roger and Me.
Yeah.
And he's got the long, greasy hair and the American tie shirt and tie. And I think Dinklage, his inspiration for his character in Pixels is that guy. And I think I want to see Pixels to see if I'm right.
Yeah, the setup of the movie is guys who were champion arcade players back in the 80s. And now, like, the real, you know, big, huge versions of those villains from the games are now attacking Earth. So these guys are brought in as the experts to help fight them.
So I have no hope for this movie at all.
Nerd version of Armageddon, basically.
I have a feeling we'll be talking about it at the end of the year for bad reasons.
That means if Peter Dinklage makes me laugh, I'm going to be really, really upset.
Well, and I've got to say, for whatever reason, when you guys were talking about this, I kept remembering a line I heard years ago where someone, I wish I could remember who, said Shane is the movie that keeps the phrase bad Alan Ladd movie from being redundant. Pivoting to that then, what are, you know, even if they aren't in great films, the really memorable performances so far this year, the things that even if the film is not great, people who were great in the films. I'll start with you, Matthew.
Gosh, even if it's not great, that's tough because I'm thinking of the films that the performances that did surprise me, like Harrison Ford in The Age of Adeline, Tom Hardy, because he doesn't steal the film. It's almost, I think somebody said it's a silent performance, and the fact that he downplays Max, and the fact that he's, you know, in this situation with all these pregnant women and Charlize Theron. I mean, he could have tried to be an action hero, and he doesn't. Yeah. And I thought that was a really smart move. And Tom Hardy keeps making interesting decisions with every film. And I hope he maintains this until he's Sean Connery's age.
I would mention a film I don't think we've talked about before, which is the Kingsman, The Secret Service, which came out in February. Let me tell you briefly, the guy who directed this made the Kick-Ass movies.
If Kick-Ass and the TV series The Avengers had a child.
Right. And then he was offered the job to direct the new X-Men movie, the one that was from this past year.
Matthew Vaughn.
And he turned it down to make this movie based on a comic book that probably no one has ever heard of. And then he changed it all around in his own image with Colin Firth as a, you know, super spy guy who's training his protege. And boy, it just sounds terrible on paper. And it's really, really wonderful. And he's good at it. But the performance that really stands out is Samuel L. Jackson as the villain, who's just this weird, kooky, you know, super smart guy, sort of Steve Jobs.
With a lisp.
With a lisp, who's from the hood, but, you know, is also super nerdy and, you know, denies he, you know, he's the villain, yet embraces a lot of villainous type of things. It's just one of those, as I said at the time, I'm not sure if it's over the top or under the top or somewhere completely to the side of the top. It's just this really offbeat performance.
And it should be noted, because we can't think of an outstanding Sam Jackson performance in a decade.
Oh, really?
Name one.
Well, how about him in, what was the one with Leonardo DiCaprio?
That was enough, well enough of a hint. I rest my case.
With Jamie Foxx as the hero.
We really need to print out lists.
Oh, Django Unchained?
Django Unchained. Tell me he wasn't good in that.
I stand corrected on that.
But these guys know I have a terrible memory for titles, so I rely on them to help
me out. Yeah, we come in, we sit in a room without no paper anywhere. anybody remember?
The movie with the guy in the
sadly, it doesn't get easier as we get older.
Oh, tell me about it. And, you know, one thing that, if you have a television, rejoice, because TV is better than movies now. You know, I mean, I hope that changes for our sake, but right now, you could just, if you have two or three DVRs, the stuff you can record on a Sunday night will keep you busy all week. There's that many high-quality programs.
Why is that? I mean, do you guys agree with that assessment, that television now has moved kind of into an ascendancy?
I would agree, and I think part of the reason is that we've sort of abandoned the traditional model of television, this idea of, you know, okay, you're on for 36 weeks a year, it's on every week, and you know, we've got this idea of much more, you know, cyclical stories, you know, like the True Detective series, which I know people are not liking the new season, you know, but the one last year where it's like, we're going to make 10 episodes that's going to exist in its own world, there's a beginning, a middle, and an end, and, you know, there's an arc of a story and characters there. You know, and that's a very cinematic way of approaching things.
And it's not necessarily going to be 48 minutes. Some episodes now,
right,
particularly with the Netflix, will be 58. Some will be 46, and we'll just stop when the story stops.
House of Cards is another example, I think, of a solid series.
And there's so many companies want their cable outlet to be in the game, that they're putting up money just to try to be respectable, and respectable right now equals quality. So they're hiring people and letting them do what they want. Talented people that usually would be fighting to find work, they're getting long-term jobs. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
I'm going to break protocol. John, what have you liked this year?
Well, yeah, I don't get to see that many movies these days.
This is why I saved it for the last minute.
Well, and, you know, a lot of them are dictated by the younger members of my family, my kids. I'm sort of where you guys were. I saw The Avengers. I enjoyed it. I thought James Spader was by far the best thing in the film. You know, it wasn't as good as the first one. So, you know, and in terms of movies that I might be looking forward to, just because I'm kind of a geek and it was part of my childhood, I am kind of curious about the Star Wars film.
Yep.
Here's hoping.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Hope that it comes back together. Well, and I hate to say it, but I think that probably will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guest, Matthew Soucy, WFYI's own of film sociology, the Film Yap's Christopher Lloyd, and as always, Nuvo's Ed Johnson Ott. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.